Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Randy Spratt to the broadcast. Randy has been Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer for McKesson Corporation since July 2005. He is responsible for all internal infrastructure and technology initiatives within the corporation. He's been with McKesson for over 20 years, and prior to his current post, was Chief Process Officer from April 2003 to July 2005 for McKesson Provider Technologies, or MPT, the company's medical software and services division. He also managed MPT's business development, information technology, and strategic planning offices, as well as MPT's technology services business. Prior to joining McKesson, Randy held executive positions of increasing responsibility at the startup Advanced Laboratory Systems, or ALS, culminating in the role of Chief Operating Officer. ALS was acquired by HBOC in 1996, which in turn was acquired by McKesson in 1999, and Randy took on responsibility for HBOC's laboratory systems business shortly thereafter. Following the acquisition of HBOC by McKesson, Randy became part of the reconstructed management team. Randy earned a Bachelor of Science degree in biology with a minor in computer science from the University of Utah. I recently spoke with Randy in his office in San Francisco. We spoke about world-class IT Principle 1, people, as we spoke about the virtual workforce. Principle 3, governance, as we spoke about the governance structure that he has designed at McKesson, as well as a number of other topics. Randy Spratt, thank you very much for joining us here on the Forum on World-Class IT.
Well, Peter, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you. Well, Randy, as Fortune magazine once put it in introducing you and the CEO of McKesson, John Hammergren, an interview, the McKesson is the largest company in the largest economic sector and the largest economy on Earth. And so your businesses range from pharmaceutical solutions to medical surgical solutions and provider technologies. So I'm wondering from this rather significant perch, if you could offer us some thoughts about your priorities, as well as more generally speaking, what you see ahead for technology leaders.
Sure, Peter. First of all, as you mentioned, we are really some very diverse assemblies of business here, some of which run on extremely thin margins and whose value proposition is around the customer intimacy and the pure efficiency of their operation. Mm-hmm. In other businesses, our value proposition is not only customer intimacy, but high technology, cutting edge capabilities mm-hmm. that take care forward into higher levels of efficiency and higher levels of quality throughout the healthcare system.
Yes.
So as you can imagine, the IT support for these businesses and their employees are very different. Mm-hmm. So my priorities always, of course, revolve around cost and efficiency, mm-hmm. but perhaps in different ways. In our distribution business, that efficiency looks much more like how efficiently can I run large data centers and large data center operations. In our technology division, that efficiency looks more like how can I equip their intellectual workforce for better collaboration, better use of IT tools to develop new technologies, new software, and enabling the workforce, if you will, mm-hmm. to achieve higher levels of productivity themselves. Mm-hmm. So, in a business of this size and scale, behind these basic issues of cost and efficiency, you find that one of our big priorities is offering different tiers of service. What might be perfectly adequate for one business, it would be considered of inferior quality to another.
Yes.
What might be reasonably scaled to one business might be seriously subscale for another, mm-hmm. and therefore inefficient. Mm-hmm. So we basically operate on four axes that we measure. The first one is cost, and we look at that as unit cost.
I see.
So what does it cost me to operate a mailbox, or what does it cost me to operate and manage a server, and so on. Our commitment to the business in cost is to continue to drive down the unit costs.
Okay.
And therefore help them enable growth. Mm-hmm. They should be able to buy more technology from me at the same price year over year to help fuel their own business strategies.
I see.
The second element is around quality, increasing our availability, increasing the robustness of our services, the protection of our data and critical assets. The third element is around timeliness, being more agile, more rapid to do everything from stand up a new server to integrate a new business. So time to market and time to achieve our strategies becomes important. And the fourth axis is the tiers of service that we offer.
I see.
How do we create different offerings that meet the various needs of the business and avoid becoming too calcified, too rigid in our standards, while at the same time keeping the proper tension to maintain levels of reference architecture and standardization around our technologies to be able to get to the efficiencies and economies of scale.
I see.
So my priorities go to that balancing act and making sure that all four of those axes that we measure are meeting the business strategies over the next 3 to 5 years of our business.
That's great. It sounds like a challenging push and pull. And I know actually, given the size of these businesses, like General Electric, you've got business units who themselves could be Fortune 500 companies. How is that balance struck? To what degree do the IT leaders within those business units have authority or autonomy versus those decisions that are made centrally at the, within the corporate IT function?
Well, that's a really great question, and there really isn't an answer to that in anything except a snapshot of time.
I see, okay.
Because it's an evolving relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When I first took this job, the level of trust and cooperation between the corporate information technology functions and the business unit technology functions were very unclear, very distrustful, frankly, and a lot of overlap in not only our mission, but our actual operations. So one of the very first things that I took on was to set up a governance structure that allowed us to plan more effectively and allowed us to align our respective capabilities more uniformly. The early stages of that were really devoted to making certain that the businesses had input into where corporate IT was spending our time and money. But over time, it's evolved to a much higher level of trust. They're seeing us now as good stewards of their money, seeing us now as effectively deploying strategies to move in the directions that they've asked us to move.
I see.
And as a result, this governance is now evolving into a place where the business units are taking what used to be purely their decision rights, domains for their decision rights.
Yes.
And bringing those decisions, or at least those decision rights, to the table as opportunities for larger participation and larger convergence.
That's great.
So if you were to ask me today, the business units today essentially have independent decision rights over the application selections that are designed to drive their business. They have influence rights over infrastructure, but largely around quality, cost, timeliness, and tiers of service rather than particular technologies or technology selections.
I see.
At the same time, all eight of the divisional business CIOs and I have come together to begin to develop a corporate-wide IT strategy to begin to look at that application landscape, which we see jointly now as our next opportunity.
I see.
How do we begin to rationalize down the number of applications and the huge tapestry of applications? How do we begin to involve not only the architectures of our infrastructure, but the architectures of our applications and then the data that the businesses use to make their decisions?
I see.
It's very nascent work, has not yet evolved into anything as formal as decision rights, but it's clear that this governance process has brought the divisional CIOs and the corporate information technology function into a much higher level of alignment with each other, mm-hmm. and allowed us to have a forum to work through these things.
That's great. You mentioned the governance structure. I know in past conversations that we've had, you've spoken about that as well. I wonder if you could talk in a little bit more detail about the way in which governance happens. I know that in the early stages of your time in your current role, you set up different committees, for example, of different types of projects would rise to and involve business to a greater degree in some of the decisions that were being made, so that they were educated as to what IT was doing. Maybe you could you speak a little bit about some of the ways in which you've thought about governance, especially as complicated a structure as you have here?
Sure. But before I get into that, I think it's probably worthwhile to actually talk about some of the problems we were trying to solve.
That's great.
With the governance.
Please,
structure.
Please.
So the first one was opaqueness of finances.
Mm-hmm.
The businesses felt that they had no input into and no insight into the costs that were being incurred by IT,
mm-hmm.
and therefore no way to evaluate, and a natural suspicion that those monies were not being well spent or not being spent on things that mattered to them.
I see.
The second problem we had is that it was difficult at best to align the behaviors of IT with the behaviors of business, because there was really no forum to do that other than shuttle diplomacy.
I see.
Where you would go to one business, ask them what they needed, and you would go to the next and the next, and by the time you'd gone to all eight businesses, the picture had changed so much that the first answer was probably no longer even accurate or valid.
I see.
So that also created this just glacial slowness of being able to accomplish change or drive new initiatives that might be supported by IT through the business.
Mm-hmm.
That in turn added to the suspicion that corporate information technologies was unresponsive and slow.
I see.
And in general, the relationship was spiraling down.
Mm-hmm.
So I created a... first of all, I turned corporate information technology into a formal shared service.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean that the activities that we performed needed to be activities that truly were shared,
mm-hmm.
because if they were activities that supported only one single business, there was no reason to centralize that.
That makes sense.
Those kinds of activities should belong with the business where the traction and the behavior lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we started shuffling responsibilities around,
mm-hmm.
Where I found some application we were supporting that only really belonged to one business, I would give it back to the business.
I see.
Where we found applications or technologies that multiple businesses were using or trying to converge on, we moved them into the shared service.
Okay.
Then, in order to effectively run a shared service, you have to have a body of people that are providing guidance,
mm-hmm.
Evaluation of your capabilities,
mm-hmm.
how well you're meeting your goals. And you also need to have a body of people that are bringing the issues and the problems, the requirements of the business to the table,
mm-hmm.
and evaluating whether or not the expenditures that you're making are effectively meeting those requirements.
I see.
So we set up three groups of people. The first is our governance board. That governance board is made up of the business unit presidents and a few other assorted executives of the company.
Okay.
And they essentially set policy and they set an approved budget. So together we agree on how much overall IT will spend,
mm-hmm.
year to year. The high-level scorecards, the strategic changes that we're trying to make to the function. And they set policy around allocation, the basic methodologies and the drivers behind allocation,
mm-hmm.
So that we have a fundamental agreement on how we're going to divide those expenses up among the businesses,
mm-hmm.
instead of arguing over this nickel or that.
Yes.
And then lastly, they provide me with what amounts to an annual performance appraisal for me and my group.
I see.
We do that in survey form, but essentially it's a formal appraisal of the performance of the function over the year.
I see.
Underneath that governance board, and that governance board today, by the way, it was originally set up to govern the IT shared service, but one of my portfolio roles is to be the executive sponsor for shared services in general. The IT shared service is perceived as being very successful in turning a group to become responsive to the business. So we've set up four or five other shared services across the company. Real estate, procurement, payroll, for example, to name a few.
Yes.
And those all each have their own councils, which I'll refer to in a moment, that in turn report up to that governance board.
I see.
So at this point, our business unit presidents are governing the expenditure in the direction of a wide variety of functions at the company. Reporting to the governance board and impaneled by the governance board is our IT Buyers Council. The IT Buyers Council is made up of representatives of each of the businesses that bring the technology requirements of that business, the technologies that are needed to support their business strategies to the table. Typically, these are the divisional CIOs. In a few cases, they may be joined or replaced by other members of the business, but it's probably easiest to think of it as the CIO panel, if you will.
Yes.
That group sees every major expenditure, every change to allocation that their business would experience as a result of activities I take on. So, for example, if we want to completely revamp the network to be responsive to issues about network bandwidth or network robustness, they would see those plans, see the business case, and approve it. Our job is to be responsive to the feedback we're getting from them in terms of, again, those four axes.
Yes.
And bring forward business cases to demonstrate that we can alter our technology infrastructure and landscape and roadmap to meet the demands of the businesses. Their job is to review those and either tell us what's wrong with it and what we need to do to be more precise or more responsive.
I see.
Or to approve the expense and therefore the allocation within budget.
Okay.
So they help us decide how to spend money and what to spend the money on to be responsive to them. And lastly, underneath the Buyers Council, there's a Technology Council. And their job is to do the technology evaluations, the vendor evaluations, stay current with regard to the direction that technology is going, to then provide the details to the business case and the business plans that we give to the IT Buyers Council.
I see.
So, for example, using that network example again, their job would be to go evaluate the offerings of the various vendors, the various needs of the business units, how much bandwidth they needed and why, the likely emergence of new capabilities around teleconferencing, telepresence, video streaming in our employee communications, things like that, and bring together a proposal to be able to describe the direction we wanted to go and what that would do to not only our current technology, but the cost structure behind it.
I see. That's very
interesting. That's how it all works.
That's great. Thank you for running through all of that.
That's how it works on a beautiful day.
Well, we've got one today, certainly, so I'm sure it's working quite well then. As you talk about that and as you talk about how IT has gotten closer and closer with the business, I wonder what that means in terms of the sorts of skills that are necessary in IT. Have you found that IT resources who have a greater degree of business savvy, who can speak the language of the business, have become more important? And I wonder how you've thought about that, how you've recruited for that, how you've trained for that, and so forth.
Certainly, the need to become more business savvy is there, but it really represents finding the people that will help you make a very fundamental culture shift. IT here 4 years ago, as in many organizations, was seen and operated like a cost center that is being held accountable to the same kind of principles that a utility would mm-hmm. be held to.
Yes.
So spend on IT was viewed as something that was capped rather than something that was driven by demand and need from the businesses.
I see.
Because expense was capped, the ability to flex, respond, improve, and change mm-hmm. is significantly stifled, because obviously we're trying to improve that cost structure every year. And without a demand element in it, you really have very little operating room.
Mm-hmm.
So the cultural change we had to make was to shift the operation to begin acting like a business. Like an IBM Global Services or like an EDS, now HP.
Yes.
And treat the McKesson business units like our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to turn this utility, where you got punished if you spent more than you were supposed to,
mm-hmm.
into a business that was actually trying to help our 8 customers, the McKesson businesses,
mm-hmm.
Understand how they could deploy technology to help advance and accelerate their revenue growth and profit growth strategies.
I see.
That meant not only getting people on board that were business savvy, but all of the things that go with running an IT services business.
Mm-hmm.
We had to start thinking about our equivalent of account management. How do we embed people in our customers' businesses, meaning the McKesson businesses?
I see.
To not only advocate back to the organization what those businesses need, but also to serve as a communication channel about what we're doing to address their needs.
Yes.
We had to start thinking about things like the equivalent of invoicing. How do we present an effective and transparent financial picture of what we are charging our businesses for, and making sure that that matches up with what they agreed to purchase from us?
I see.
How do we become more agile so that if they need to ramp their expense up or down based on business conditions and business needs,
mm-hmm.
that we can respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
If they need to sever a line of business or a product to meet either a change in market or a change in business conditions,
mm-hmm.
They would naturally expect that their expense levels would go down. In a utility model, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And more than anything, we had to establish a culture of helping our customers, measuring what we do in terms of customer satisfaction. Now, you know, there's a lot of axes to that, a lot of elements to customer satisfaction, but we spent an awful lot of time working on reward systems, on incentive systems, on structures and roles and responsibilities
mm-hmm.
that enforced the concept of customer satisfaction.
I see.
So this is a whole raft of skills that we needed. I took a glance at your five-step model mm-hmm. of IT effectiveness
mm-hmm.
and found a great deal of resonance in the way that you present that and the way that we see it as well.
That's great.
The underlying capability of anything we do is our employee capability and our employee satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
We dug very deeply into the issues behind our employee satisfaction, which not surprisingly 4 years ago was the worst of any measured organization at McKesson.
Wow.
And found many of the root problems that you describe here.
I see.
Unclear roles, overlapping responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
Great technologists that have been promoted to be poor managers,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
lack of leadership training, lack of leadership bench strength, unclear incentives, conflicting messages mm-hmm. about the importance of each person's role and organization.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, unclear messages about what the function, about what success really looked like
mm-hmm.
in the function. So we spent a great deal of time putting a management team together that could effectively put together a strategy, a set of planks that supported that strategy, and tie those planks down to the individual departmental and managerial and employee behaviors
mm-hmm.
getting a very solid end-to-end time.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of management skills, I mean, just what you would perceive in a typical business as being just good management skills.
Yes.
Were I think, one of the biggest gaps that we had.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call those business skills. I would call them management skills.
Mm-hmm.
We did have to bring in a group of people that we now call product managers. I think many organizations might call them architects.
But mm-hmm.
Their responsibility is to take each one of the services that we offer, you know, such as end-user computing or network management or
mm-hmm.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
and match up where we are and where we're going with that service with the feedback we get from the business and the strategies that the businesses bring back to us about where they're going.
Okay.
So directly inserting a function that's responsible for planning our direction in concert with where our businesses are going
mm-hmm.
Also became a crucial skill.
Mm-hmm.
Project management turned out to be an incredibly important skill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as we dug more deeply into what we were doing, we had pretty good infrastructure operations, but we were breaking down in our responsiveness to the business's need for new projects. Turned out that was because we were taking a lot of our project managers and applying them back to keeping the lights on.
I see.
Instead of to the innovation side of the business, the new applications and the new capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So organizationally, we needed to clarify that and bring in some fabulous project management leadership, the tools that surround that capability, and regain, or I'm not sure we ever had it, gain the reputation of being able to deliver reliably from a cost standpoint, from a capability standpoint, on the 500 or so projects we did for our businesses each year.
That's great.
Going forward, you know, if you look out the next half decade or so, it's clear that our businesses are now coming to us as much for thought leadership and assistance as they are for just day-to-day operations.
Mm-hmm.
So those placements that we've made are going to have to take it up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to become the consulting arm,
mm-hmm.
if you will, of our organization. So our journey, very much the way you depict it, has been regain the confidence of the business
mm-hmm.
that we can be good stewards of their money and be effective in our day-to-day operations,
mm-hmm.
which gave us the chops or the credibility to then deliver effectively on their new projects and their new capabilities,
mm-hmm.
which is giving us now the credibility to become the consultants that help them understand what technologies could really do for them. So I found resonance in the way you described that. I think our journey has been very much the same way.
That's great. I appreciate that. I think, and
let me add that,
please.
That, just as you describe it here, that
yes.
that's making CIT into a desirable place to work.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be a place that brought in technology, trained it for a year and a half, and then lost it to the business.
I see.
And we're now seeing as much inflow of people into our organization that want to learn how to operate at scale, that want to learn how to run large projects,
mm-hmm.
that want to pick up new skills or new capabilities, as we are outflow of some of our best people back into the businesses.
That's great.
So, you know, I think it works.
That's great. It's an extraordinary change that you describe. And we often say that cultural change is some of the most difficult because it's change of behaviors, change of perceptions, change of the way in which you interact with the business. And so what you described just is so exciting. And in some ways, I think it must have been a daunting task at the outset of this, and yet so gratifying now that so much has been accomplished. As you point out, there's still a lot left to be accomplished. But I appreciate you sharing that perspective. As I hear these stories, the ones that you just mentioned with regard to governance, the extent to which this has become almost a consultative part of the business to an increasing degree, the extent to which the shared services model has become a model that is extended beyond IT, And I know that in our past conversations, I'd like to move to a different topic that you've talked about in the past, in the way that in which IT has now, and you personally have played a leadership role in acquisitions and in managing the integration. Maybe if you could take a few minutes and talk a little bit about that. I see that as I know some of the things you've done in those areas seem to be very much in sort of the same vein as what you're describing, where IT is seen as sort of a leader, not only within kind of the traditional constructs of IT, but something much broader than that. Perhaps you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. The interesting thing about acquisitions of new companies mm-hmm. is that regardless of scale, mm-hmm. They essentially touch every function in the business. There are very few organizations that touch every function in the business.
Mm-hmm.
IT is one of them. HR is one of them.
Yes.
Arguably finance
exactly.
is
yep.
one of them.
Yeah.
The difference between those three functions, or at least one difference between those three functions, is that IT is very familiar with running projects. That's half of what we do in life.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, by accident, a more significant role in one of our major acquisitions than we were typically performing
mm-hmm.
In the past. We acquired a large company that wound up being divided up into virtually every organization at McKesson.
Mm-hmm.
Pieces of the business went to pharmacy distribution, pieces of the business went to technology, pieces of the business went to a whole new segment that we created.
I see.
And there wasn't a clear single owner of the business integration of that acquisition mm-hmm. because it was being distributed.
Mm-hmm.
So our CEO asked me if I would take that role for this particular acquisition. I told him that I would, provided that at the end of it, that he and the executive committee would consider taking our learnings from that and applying it as a potential function that could help enable future acquisitions. So that's what we did, and it's accidental, really, that it's in IT, but IT plays a role in every acquisition we do,
mm-hmm.
and so it was a natural home.
Mm-hmm.
We set up a little group of people that have created what amount to templates and project plans and cookbooks, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of how each function should undertake the assimilation of that activity in a new business acquisition. So there's a cookbook for HR, there's a cookbook for finance, there's a cookbook for IT,
yes.
cookbook for legal, and then the operations itself, depending on the kind of business, have more general templates. Mm-hmm. Obviously, acquiring a distribution business that we're going to take into our warehouses is very different than acquiring a company for their intellectual property and
yes.
their customer base.
That makes sense.
We set that group up. We created all of the collaboration tools and the SharePoint sites and the intellectual property behind it, took in the information and project plans and findings of the last five or six acquisitions that we'd done, molded all of those into a single set of tools, and now it is its own little shared service.
I see.
It turns out it's one of the most highly valued shared services that we have. Probably just because the activities behind an integration, behind an acquisition, are relatively rare for any individual that might be assigned to it.
Mm-hmm.
As a company, we do 10 to 15 acquisitions a year, but when you look at the people actually running the business integration, typically that's a once-in-a-lifetime job. You've achieved some high level of potential. We're going to, appoint you to be the business integration leader.
Yes.
And the first thing you do is realize you've never done one of these before. And you now have a group to turn to that kickstarts these.
I see. Okay.
They come in with the full tool set. the full knowledge behind all the rest of these go, mm-hmm. and all of the contacts and all of the supporting organizations needed to marshal the team mm-hmm. to begin to do that acquisition. Mm-hmm. The communications pre-written, just fill in the templates, the sequencing of activities mm-hmm. already planned out. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is that we've accelerated the early integration activities of acquisitions by months by taking this on.
That's exciting. Yeah. Very exciting. Another great story. I wonder if you could take a moment, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, the way in which the different business units use technology and interact with technology can be quite different based upon the sorts of businesses that they are. I wonder, though, if you can take a moment and think about the decade ahead or the half decade ahead. What are some of the technologies that you see emerging that are going to be of particular use or interest of a business like this one? You've mentioned before, Web 2.0, and you've mentioned virtualization, both from the perspective of infrastructure, but also the virtualization of staff as well, from an employee perspective. What are the sorts of ideas that you see emerging that McKesson are going to, are likely to, or businesses like this one are likely to leverage?
Sure. At the heart of all of these are technology evolutions, mm-hmm. I think, that will produces a pretty significant change in how we deliver technology services to our business and to our customers mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Underlying this are a few premises that we probably ought to be clear about, because if these don't come true, probably the rest of this won't come true.
I see, yes.
But we believe that, number one, there will be significant increases in the quality and the bandwidth of widespread networks, mm-hmm. Whether they're internet-based or wide-area corporate networks.
Yes.
So we anticipate being able to push much larger volumes of data at much higher speeds and at lower costs than we do today. Mm-hmm. Secondly, same scenario in storage. We expect that storage costs are going to drop, the reliability of storage will continue to improve, and the density of storage will continue to rise. Mm. And thirdly, the same kinds of phenomena will take place around servers, around compute power, that we'll be able to accomplish significantly higher number of transactions, and however you measure a transaction,
yes,
for lower cost. Now, what will all of this produce? The first thing it'll produce is to continue the trend of moving the technology away from, or maybe more accurately, hiding the physical presence of the technology from the end user. Mm-hmm. Some people refer to this as cloud computing. Mm-hmm. Clouds could be corporate clouds. They could be publicly managed clouds. Mm-hmm. They could be managed by a Google or a Microsoft, mm-hmm. but they're in essence, they're all saying the same thing.
Yes.
That more and more and more people will get comfortable not having their technology on their desktop or in their department or in their building, mm-hmm. but much more willing and accepting of moving the technology away from them physically.
Yes.
The second thing is that, which goes right along with this, is that we would expect that people will become much more mobile. Mm-hmm. That could be mobile with regard to where their physical workplace is. Mm-hmm. Could be mobile with regard to having no particular physical workplace. Mm-hmm. And that means, of course, that we have to not only create business solutions for those people, but we have to create the attractants to continue to make us a desirable place to work.
Yes.
For an increasingly mobile, increasingly, call it virtual workforce. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're dabbling in those areas, in some cases quite formally, mm-hmm. In other cases examining applicability of technologies in their current state. So, for example, we have a work-at-home program for our nurses. If you call 1-800-ASK-A-NURSE, you've got about a 50% chance of actually talking to a McKesson employee. Hmm. We have well over 1,000 nurses that respond to 1-800-ASK-A-NURSE phone calls. Every one of them works at home. So the call routing, the clinical content systems that help them respond to those questions, log those questions, the technologies and the network connectivity that go in their homes, those are all part of the technology package that that we need to deploy to these nurses as they're hired. In some cases, when we take on a major contract, we'll be hiring dozens and dozens or hundreds at a time. So being able to deploy those technologies out to individual homes in a rapid basis helps that business ramp and scale because they're not geographically constrained. That virtual workforce has proven to be enormously successful in all areas except one. The employee satisfaction is extremely high for our work-at-home force, except around their, I'll call it socialization, their ability to connect with the larger fabric of the business. They don't have anybody to talk to at the water cooler. It's hard to have management meetings. It's hard to, you know, have that constant flow of communications through anything other than email that tell you you're doing a good job or tell you where the department's headed or the business is headed or even simple things like employee recognition. So we began to deploy some collaboration tools out to the businesses, things like chat, so they could start, the nurses could start talking with one another. Have you seen this kind of problem before? That chat evolved into what amounts to water cooler talk as well. People started using, you know, their free minutes to exchange everything from the social conversations to planning virtual meetings together. That led us to start deploying tools like Microsoft Live Office, where they could hold little web-based meetings or engage in multi-person chat, and now starting to dabble into the video, desktop video capabilities. A little early to call that one, frankly, getting a little bit of a mixed review, but the collection of tools seems to be addressing that need to be able to connect with your coworkers,
that's
your
great
immediate managers and supervisors. On a broader scale, as all of those technology trends continue to emerge, we also see the backdrop of travel costs going up and employee time, especially executive time, becoming increasingly valuable. So we've deployed high-end collaboration tools like Cisco's telepresence rooms with just remarkably good feedback. Every single one of the executives surveyed about telepresence said that they would prefer to have a telepresence meeting than to get on an airplane for the meeting.
That's powerful.
We, right now, our biggest problem with telepresence is that all of the rooms we put up are almost fully booked. So all the overflow goes onto airplanes.
I see.
These undoubtedly will continue to evolve. We continue to look at things like wikis and I don't want to call them social networking tools, but more like advanced employee directories that offer some of the capabilities of a Facebook or a MySpace, but are much more targeted toward a business need rather than purely fulfilling a social need. I would rather allow Facebook on my network for the pure social need and let people spend a little bit of time using Facebook for their social need and provide a more focused and directed tool to serve the direct business need around finding people with particular skills or talents or capabilities.
That makes sense.
That other side of virtualization that you mentioned, which is being able to operate our infrastructure much more efficiently. We are pushing very hard on that and making great progress on it. Right now, we are about 10% virtualized from a server standpoint, and almost 100% virtualized from a storage standpoint. We're undergoing right now data center consolidations. This is an ongoing effort because as we acquire businesses, we usually pick up a data center if the business is of any scale. But by the time we're finished with the current wave of consolidations, we will have taken roughly 25 to 30% of the total cost of operating our data centers out of the equation through a combination of not only the physical consolidation, but the server consolidation onto virtualized platforms where it's appropriate.
I see.
The R&D organizations that up until now have demanded that they be able to touch and feel and massage their equipment are beginning to see the advantages of pushing that out to a virtual environment too, because suddenly they can have a server available to them in a matter of hours instead of going through a purchasing cycle and a justification cycle to be able to bring that equipment in-house. So we think that side of it, which leads us more toward operating as our own corporate cloud, if you will, offers powerful benefits on the cost side. We see these virtual workforces as offering powerful benefits when properly equipped with the collaboration tools to bring employees in contact with one another, offers powerful benefits in attracting and retaining a talented workforce.
That's great. Well, very interesting. Well, Randy, I appreciate you taking this time and sharing your perspectives and talking about this really incredible journey that that you've overseen here at McKesson IT. Thank you so much for taking this time.
It's my pleasure, and as with all journeys, we continue to look for the new horizons and the next goals.
Very good. Well, good luck with those.
Thanks, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World-Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to Meta Strategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important first and foremost that the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all the other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles, namely people, infrastructure, and project and portfolio management, are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial aspect to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, or please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Thank you.